thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
My mic was on.
Here's John Williams.
And I was sniffling. Sorry about that. Hi. This is John. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio. We're here weekdays from 1 to 3 and Saturdays from 10 a.m. till 12 noon on social media. I'm WGN King John. I just posted my State of the Union bingo card. We have the State of the Union bingo card. Check each box. When the president says or does the things that are on the bingo card, it's a way to pass the time. I will be at the Loyola basketball game tonight. I will not be able to watch the president's State of the Union address. And I'm not sure if I'm going to the game because of that or if I'm sorry that I will miss the president's State of the Union address. I think it would cause me so much anxiety, and yet I would feel compelled to watch it, that I would be in a no-win situation. Thank you, Loyola Ramblers. I'll have to watch the president's speech in clips after the fact. People in Chicago today are talking about this story that is in the Sun-Times, the Tribune, WGN Radio. I'm reading from a Sun-Times version of it. The Chicago Cubs have had their share of fights with City Hall. This latest fight is different. The website splinternews.com Monday posted more emails from TD Ameritrade founder Joe Ricketts, who is also the patriarch of the family that owns the Cubs. He's no longer involved in the day-to-day operations of the Cubs, his son wants you to know, but he did help finance the original purchase. So what we have now is a trove of email to and from Joe Ricketts, age 77. These go back about 7 to 10 years, so he isn't able to cop youthful indiscretion the way, say, the governor of Virginia is trying to explain away his sins. This is the rantings or measured feelings of an adult, successful billionaire in his late 60s and early 70s. Muslims and Islamophobia are getting the headlines today, but when you read through the entire cache that this website has printed, and I did, you'll see that he's equally willing to laugh at blacks and Hispanics and say and laugh at the most horrible things. May 15th, 2012, subject radical Islam. He writes, "I am very conservative and selfish as I look at this, at protecting my family." This is Joe Ricketts writing to a friend about radical Islam. And he said, "Look, my MO here is protecting my family. That makes me conservative and selfish. I don't think any of us would blame anybody for being that." He says, "We cannot let Iran have the nuclear bomb. Christians and Jews can have a mutual respect for each other to create a civil society. As you know, Islam cannot do that. Therefore, we cannot ever let Islam become a large part of our society. Muslims are naturally my enemy due to their deep antagonism and bias against non-Muslims. In fact," he says, "I'm giving consideration to having a book written with the title Islam, Religion, or Cult." So that's May of 2012. A year later, April 2013, just to kind of give you a sense of the timeline, his feelings don't really evolve. To somebody else named E, he writes, "Hi, yesterday I was quite hard on Muslims in our conversation." Not referring to the previous email I just read to you, but some conversation we're not privy to. "So I wanted to send you this information. I have a private charity that I started and support, Opportunity Education Foundation. We have a website. My brother is the chief administrator. Recently, our group returned from Africa after having visited some of the schools we support. Attached is information on a Muslim school I support in Uganda. Their thank you letter is the attachment, and a video of their school and our visit is shown below. I particularly like helping Muslim schools to show them that we are not bad people. Cheers, Joe." And then later, on the ideal percentage of Muslims in a society, a family friend writes to Joe in June of 2012, so about this same time, a long missive about the dangers of Muslims in any population. They write, "As long as the Muslim population remains around or under 2%, they will be mostly regarded as a peace-loving minority. If they get to 5%, then they infiltrate the school cafeterias and food system. If they get to 80%, it goes on and on and on. Then suddenly you have a jihad and violent intimidation." Obama appoints two devout Muslims to Homeland Security post. Doesn't that make you feel safer already, they write? Joe Ricketts takes this long missive, sends it to a colleague of his, and says, please keep this for me for future reference. On Obama's past life as a drug mule and gay sex worker, from Joe Ricketts to JG, April 22nd, 2011, and then he goes on to pass along this long conspiracy theory about how Barack Obama's a hidden Muslim and he's here to do work for some foreign country and he's maybe a gay sex worker. Imagine that. Here's just a typical sentence. It is unlikely that Barry was a jihadist and was most likely a drug mule, if anything, maybe even a CIA street hire to haul Afghan heroin back to New York so the Afghans could buy U.S.-made Stinger missiles with U.S. dollars to shoot down Russian helicopters? That's the sort of stuff that Joe Ricketts, that's the craziness that he was trading and forwarding.
Was he writing that or passing that on?
In this case, it was a missive written by what was purported to be a former IRS agent who had the goods. This is not his writing. It's him forwarding that to somebody. From Joe Ricketts to a number of others. Americans believe in religious freedom. Muslims don't. And then Joe sends a long story about the training that a prison minister got on the beliefs of Muslims. This is a guy who's going to go into the prison system and he's going to be a minister to all. So he's got to get updated on what the Muslims believe. And the story is that this prison minister was trained that Muslims are out to kill non-believers. And Joe Ricketts forwards that. He gets an email from his son, Peter. Dad, I recommend that you go to Snopes and search on these stories before you pass them on. In this case, there is a dispute over what exactly happened here and who was represented in this training session. Go to the link above and search Rick Mathis Prison Ministry Islam. The father responds to the son, thanks, Peter. However, I think Islam is a cult and not a religion. Christianity and Judaism are based on love, whereas Islam is based on kill the infidel, a thing of evil. The son responds back to the dad, I'm not sure that your statement is accurate with regard to Islam, but I recommend reading the piece on Snopes. So on it goes back and forth. How embarrassing, how revealing. Ricketts has now said that here's his quote. He said, I've said things that don't reflect my value system. I strongly believe that bigoted ideas are wrong. I can't read that with a straight face. Clearly you think bigoted ideas are funny, and clearly you're interested in forwarding bigoted ideas, and you may have some, in your mind, logical dislike of Muslims, and maybe you can justify that, but you are clearly trading in bigoted ideas and forwarding racist and bigoted humor. Not once in this exchange, just one last point here, and then we'll bring in Rich Lenkov, but not once in all of these email and all of these forwards is there an instance where he says, hey, this is stupid, back off. Take me off of this list. Responding to one fear-mongering post sent to him about how Muslims have overtaken European culture, Ricketts responds, yes, very sobering. Often his responses are like that. He's tolerant of all of this conversation. Sometimes he'll say things like, if true, very interesting, or cute. He doesn't say, this is BS and take me off this list. A racist joke was emailed to him and several others, and the punchline is the N-word. And Ricketts' response was, great laugh. Respond to another post sent to him. Ricketts says, I agree. I'm tired of multicultural and diversity aspects of our culture. I don't think you can explain that away in four sentences, which he has tried to do. Rahm Dovin, the mayor of Chicago, says, I'm proud not to share his bigoted opinions. Hate has no home in Chicago. Okay, so take that for what it is, but that's what it is. And by the way, he is an influencer. He gave to and donated against Donald Trump's election, but these are the people that have a lot of money and can influence advertising and opinions. So there's that.
You know, and the thing is, like, well, this isn't the case in my parents, my family, but I think a lot of us can, you know, relate to the younger Ricketts saying, come on, Dad, right? You know, you got to look at this stuff. Don't believe everything you see. But this guy created a billion-dollar company, right? Or, I mean, a hugely successful...
Ameritrade. Hello. Steve, it's funny because Rich Linkoff joins us now on WGN. You hear him often here, and he's got a terrific podcast at this fine little radio station of ours, too. Hi, Rich.
Hi.
It's very interesting that many of the comments on the website that posted this are just what Steve described. A lot of people saying, yeah, I had an uncle like that. Literally, I had an uncle like that, and he was a good guy, or he was a successful guy, or he was an intelligent guy, but he had these bigoted views. And they don't know what to do with it. What can you? And you cannot talk these people out of those views.
Yeah, I mean, obviously abhorrent views. From a legal perspective, though, what interests me is a couple things. What legal recourse he might have, you know, as crazy as it sounds. We know that he's got a lot of resources. He's got a team of lawyers. So he will probably fight back once the dust settles. And then what recourse does Major League Baseball have against him? Because remember, even though, you know, Tom Ricketts has now come out and said that he has no part in the ownership, he did fund the team. So from a legal perspective, what recourse does Joe Ricketts have? A lot of people think that he might, you know, automatically you think, well, this might be defamation and he might sue this website for libel. That's out of the question, of course, because a defense to libel is the truth. So if this website, and he hasn't come out and said it's not truthful, an automatic defense to libel is truth. So that's out of the picture.
Right, let's just, because you, they have not said this is not the actual email exchanges.
Right. If
so
Joe
these
Ricketts,
are true.
Exactly. If Joe Ricketts came out and said this is not truthful, then he might pursue a libel cause of action.
And the article doesn't editorialize. They're simply publishing.
Exactly.
They're just republishing. But is it legal for them to publish what he believes to be a private exchange?
Well, that's the bigger question and the more interesting one legally, I think. Because...
Answer that in a minute.
Great.
Answer that. I'll take a quick break, and then you may call or text as well, 312-981-7200. And we're getting lots of texts. Here's just an example. 312, John, my Trump supporter friend honestly believes that Obama is gay and Michelle is a man. There are people out there willing to do that. When they have $1 billion, it gets frightening. Okay, Rich, explain the legal aspect to this to us in a minute. Hi. Well, here I am just talking to our guest off the air, Patrick Kane, Connor McDavid, two of the NHL's best trade shots in a must-watch matchup from Edmonton. That's tonight on WGN-TV and WGN Radio, too, by the way. Okay, Rich Lankoff, whose podcast you hear with Tina Martini at WGNRadio.com or wherever you subscribe to find her podcast. It's called Legal Face-Off. So we just heard during that commercial break from the author of that Splinter News article. And she told my producer, I won't go into how we got those emailed, but he was not hacked. So that means to me that somebody who was on those chains shared them with her. Okay, so your thoughts.
Yeah, it sounds like a leak, and it sounds like Joe Ricketts won't pursue any legal action. But if he did, the cause of action here in Illinois, as in many states, would be called publication of a private fact. And that's an invasion of privacy cause of action. It's a tort whereby you allege, just like the name implies, there's nothing incredibly complicated about it, that a private fact, in this case being the email exchange, was publicized without your consent, and that you suffered some damages as a result because the content was offensive to a reasonable person. Those are the three elements. So that it was private, it was published, and it was offensive to a reasonable person. That all seems to fit here, but there's a big but. The exception is it can't be newsworthy. It can't be a publication that is about a public figure or about a public figure that would be newsworthy. In this case, I think it clearly qualifies
Why?
As newsworthy.
Why?
Because Joe Ricketts is the patriarch of the family that owns the Cubs.
How is that newsworthy? How is that? He's not the CEO of the Cubs.
Well, that's what his son has now come out and said online. He said that he has no ownership interest, But, you know, he did his money from Ameritrade, did start the team. The question of whether he's a public figure, I think, is without question. Even if you put his relationship with the Cubs aside, he's been in the news. He's been a supporter of Trump over the years. So I think he's definitely a public figure. That's why I think this is newsworthy. That's why I think an invasion of privacy cause of action would fail.
Okay, well, listen, none of us likes this, and none of us likes those kind of politics. If you do, toodles. But I'm not comfortable with publicly sharing people's private email, even when it's hateful. In fact, you could argue that we'd all be better off if it were not made public. That kind of bile is best left kept in. I understand the flip of that. No, we need to find out who these billionaires are and what their private views are, and then we understand the politics today. But I think you could go back and forth on that. At the end of the day, I think a lot of us could be deigned a public figure or newsworthy, and lo and behold, the private exchange you and I are having is in the Sun-Times and Tribune again, and I don't like that.
Yeah, listen, if you're a public figure, that goes with the territory, would be the argument, and be careful what you put in emails, right? And we've seen...
And this was 7 years ago, but that wasn't 100 years ago. That was 7 years ago. We had plenty of email instances 5 and 7 and 9 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, that's a perfectly legitimate debate. I think many people would rather have those emails see the light of day than keep them private. Again, especially if you're a public figure. If it's a private figure, then that's what this cause of action is meant to remedy. But for public figures, if they're exchanging this kind of emails, I think most people would want to see that.
I don't know. Most people want to see that? You think we're all better off knowing this about him?
I personally think so. I think it's better to know that someone is exchanging racist emails if they're in the, you know, if they're a public figure, for sure.
And there's plenty of people who aren't, who are having group emails back and forth, and it's just as ugly as this. They're not public figures, so we shouldn't see that.
Well, whether you should or shouldn't, legally, there's a cause of action for that.
Okay, but there shouldn't be there should be protection for private citizens,
but not
for public.
Oh, I think so. I think, you know, if you are exchanging private emails, again, there's some expectation of privacy. Just like someone comes to your house and rifles through your mail, that's not what you expect. That's not fair. Then you should have a cause of action against that person for publication of a private fact. Email is no different between private figures. Again, the law makes an exception for public figures. Whether, you know, you like that or not is a different question, but the law does recognize that.
Legal Face Off is the podcast that Rich Lankoff and Tina Martini do. Catch it at WGNradio.com or wherever you get your free and finer podcasts. Their last guest was Amara Enya. How about them apples? Is that one been posted?
It has been, yep. It's available right now on WGN.
Okay, WGNradio.com. I'm out of time. We're going to do the news. We're going to talk to that Packer fan later on who ruined it for everybody. In the meantime, thanks for coming into our studio.
Thanks, John.
What was the high yesterday, the day before?
51
degrees.
I remember, yeah.
And 3 days earlier, it was 51 below zero. And now we're in that worst place of all, maybe 31 degrees in precipitation. You get a little ugh.
That's tough, and I know ComEd is taking steps to be ready, but it's one of those things where, you know, the outages that come, if they come, you know, will be small ones, sporadic ones, you know, which means that we've got a lot of different little places to clean up from.
Well, I'll tell you, I wonder if what this means is if the high pressure from the north is just a little bit elevated by 42 to 43 isobars, and we've got a report from Gurdie that it might be, then maybe it won't be that bad. The temperature will be warm enough, it'll be rain.
That would be nice. Are you making that up, or are you saying that?
Let's let Tom Skilling respond.
Here, come here.
Hi, Tom, you're on the air.
Oh, very good. I've got a dog here who's going to start barking momentarily. Didn't expect to be called. How are you, John?
Tom Skilling, WGN meteorologist. How worried should we be about this ice storm, Mr. Skilling?
Well, you know, we've certainly seen worse, but this is the last time we've had an ice storm of substance around here was about 10 years ago. And, you know, this could put down a quarter inch to a third of an inch of ice. Wow. That's no laughing matter. Yeah. You know, you're walking on untreated outdoor surfaces, and, you know, you've got kind of a skating rink effect. So we had a little preview of that last week for a brief period. It was just a slight coating. This is a little more than that. It'll start around 7 o'clock this evening, give or take an hour, and then we'll get about 10 to 12 hours of precipitation. And what's going on here is we've got warm air running up over the cold air. You go up to around 3,200 feet, it'll be near 50 degrees. And yet down here at ground level, we'll be talking about 28 to 30. So what happens is you get raindrops to form in the clouds. They fall down through the cold layer, and they freeze upon contact with surfaces. And you can get into, you know, obviously some pretty dicey situations with that from a walking and or travel standpoint on untreated surfaces.
So, Tom, it seems like most of us can be home in time for the when this starts. But if you said 10 to 12 hours of precip, that could be 7 a.m. tomorrow. Is tomorrow going to be the big trouble when it comes to commuting?
No, I don't think so. There'll be some residual ice in the northwest suburbs. I think, Steve, the temperatures will be creeping higher during the course of the night. So, for instance, in the southern suburbs, where it may start out icy, I would imagine the precipitation will go over to liquid and not be freezing or super cooled or freezing on the pavement. And that will, no doubt, toward morning extend north into the city. I think north and west of the city, if you get out toward, Lake County, McHenry County, Boone, Winnebago, Kane, DeKalb, Kendall, and Grundy counties in westward, Lee and Ockel and so forth, those areas may hang on to some freezing rain into the early part of the day, but this is a pretty fast-moving weather system, so its precipitation will be moving out of here after early tomorrow. Then we look for the next one that comes in, but that one, while it may start as a wintry mix late Wednesday or Wednesday night, will go over to rain, and we may actually see the temperatures bounce up to 50 by Thursday morning in parts of the area, then crash in the afternoon, and we've got a pretty cold spell of weather coming Friday and Saturday, though nothing on a par with what we just said goodbye to last week.
Well, it's a real yo-yo these days with the thermometer, isn't it?
It really is. Well, you know, an interesting comment was made about that cold air last week by Brian Brettschneider. He's a kind of a Arctic climatologist, watches these Arctic outbreaks. And he said, what was interesting about last week's cold spell is the limited aerial coverage of it, relatively speaking, and also its limited length. You know, we had about 3 days of barbaric cold, and then we went through a 73-degree five-day warm-up, which is a record, by the way. It's the fastest five-day warm-up we could find on the books around here. And it was like almost spring as you went into the summer, and we obliterated a 9-inch snow cover. So you are right, John. It's bounced around and made for some awfully interesting weather, but also challenging at times.
Boy, the mind reels. 73 degrees in 5 days. So if you just took 73 as your starting point, then say one day it's 30. At the end of the week, it would be 103. I mean, that's insane. That's cuckoo.
It is cuckoo. And you know what? While we were shivering down here, a friend of mine up in Alaska emailed me or messaged me and said, hey, you got to come up here to warm up.
Yeah.
You know, they actually canceled the sled dog race up there. Isn't that something? Because it was raining and the snow cover was bad. Yeah. So it's really, and we pointed out during that cold spell last week that really, if you looked at the globe as a whole, we were in cold air, so was eastern Siberia. But much of the rest of the planet was running above normal on temperatures. So, but boy, we sure got into a heck of a cold spell on that, no question. I mean, that's nothing to fool with. Extremes in temperature are the most deadly weather events on the planet.
Yeah. I know that you're busy, Tom. You told us you'd give us a few minutes. As always, you gave us more than a few. Before you go, though, I'm sure you've
done. Happy to talk to you. I start here at home at 8:30, and I pull down my pictures for the TV side and the model data and all, and kind of blog an update on what's going on. Always happy to talk to you, John. So it's a pleasure that you call.
What's the name of the dog? Have you told Ro the name of your dog?
That was Natty. And Maddie's sister here is Callie. Then we have a kitty, too. The kitty is Waldo. And the three of them get along in magnificent fashion. You really could do a series on this, you know, or a television show to watch the interaction. They're like best friends. But whenever somebody calls me, they hear the voice on the speaker and kind of go crazy. I think they think somebody's sneaking into the place. So They're a lot of fun, though. They really are.
I'm disappointed that none of them don't have weather-related names, like one of the dog or cat would be named Barry for barometric or something, you know?
Well, you know what, John? I had a cat that I named Vorticity years ago.
There we go.
And, yeah, Vorticity was there. And you know, my next pet, if I go if we adopt another pet, I think Isodrosotherm would be a great name and rather unique. You know, but
at the dog park, you would be the only one. You only one dog would come if you said Isodrithotherm. Here, boy.
You know, that gets a little bit old, doesn't it? They have weather people naming their dogs after weather terminology, but it makes life fun. I'll tell you that.
You always do. Thank you, Mr. Skilling.
John, a pleasure to talk to you. You too, Steve, and you guys take care and be careful tonight.
Thanks, Tom.
That's Tom Skilling, WGN-TV meteorologist and also a good friend to Ro Khan. Pretty much everybody is a good friend to Ro Khan. You hear him regularly with Ro in the afternoons on WGN. You know, Steve, that was the... And as he started to talk, I started to hear my voice doing his voice. He said that was a 73-degree swing. It was the fastest five-day warm-up we've had in recorded history around here.
Well, I'm grateful for it.
Yeah, no kidding. Better to go up 73, I guess, than down, especially if you're starting at 20 below. lots of text messages about our first half-hour conversation about Tom Ricketts. In fact, one of you said, I can't believe you took zero phone calls on this issue. This needs to be a longer conversation than 5 minutes that you gave it. Okay, we will. I'll read some of your text messages, and if you want to chime in, you can. Here's the question we had for Rich Lankoff. We said, Rich... But with that being his first name and all, what does the law say about two people exchanging what they believe to be private email? Even if it's a group email, we are all in this private email exchange. Some of the stuff, were it to be made public, would be embarrassing to us, but it's our private email. We aren't posting this on Facebook. And then you wake up one morning and some website has it posted, and now the whole world is reading what you would have believed to be private and wished that we weren't reading. So what does the law say about that? And he said, if you're a public figure, you really don't have any protection here. If it's deemed newsworthy or if you're a public figure, then you pretty much sacrifice your right to privacy in these email. And I said, I'm not real 100% comfortable with that. And I'm not 100% certain that we're all better off knowing this. I'm sorry that we know it. I mean, it's sorry that anybody has these horrible views. But are we all a better place now that we know that about Mr. Ricketts, and are you surprised anyway? So there's that Ricketts thing. You know what I was doing, though? I was over here. Pardon me. Grab my laptop. There's that old saying about, I was looking it up. It's something like, character is what you say or do when other people are watching or when people aren't watching or something like that. Do you know the saying I'm talking about? Because I'm thinking about Mr. Ricketts here, because he said what I said does not reflect my values.
Is it integrity? It's one of those posters. Integrity.
Integrity is, how does that saying go? Read that poster to me. Be more concerned with your character than your reputation, because character is what you really are. Here's the one I found. Character is what you really are. Reputation is merely what others think you are. That's not exactly the one I'm thinking of, but it's along those lines where he said, okay, so I've been sharing all of these awful, racist, bigoted, Islamophobic, terrible things, and I've been laughing and trading on them and sharing them and all of that. Now that you found out that about me, I want you to know this. Those do not reflect my values, which makes you wonder, how does anybody know somebody's values but by the way they express themselves, right? And if those don't reflect your values, it really doesn't matter. If you're doing a perfect impersonation of a bigot, then it's kind of a moot point anyway. But he wants you to know, no, I'm not that. I'm this other person. In fact, he even precedes that with a really remarkable sentence. It was something like, let's see. I strongly believe that bigoted ideas are wrong. Really? Well, props to you, sir. So bigoted ideas are wrong. If you have to write that sentence, you're in deep doo-doo, Jack. Joe, if you find yourself typing out, I believe bigoted ideas are wrong, boy, are you backpedaling.
C.S. Lewis. Integrity is doing the right thing even when no one's watching.
Thank you. Do that again.
Integrity is doing the right thing even when no one is watching.
Yeah. John 630 writes, anyone who emails, texts, or tweets and who is naive enough to think that these messages are not going to be forwarded or saved is just dumb. 847, we should all wear screens on our foreheads that reveal our current thoughts with an archive of our past thoughts so people can judge us appropriately. 206, wait until this old racist fool finds out Muslims believe in the same God as Christians and Jews. 708, Joe Ricketts was an early birther. He donated lots of money to that cause and to Trump, but again, Trump is the only one that gets away with it. 708, John, I find it interesting in the wake of all of these horrific admissions from a lifetime ago, everyone else becomes holier than thou. Well, it wasn't a lifetime ago. Remember, when he had these views, he was in his 60s. 815, and you wonder why the majority of the country hate the media. I really don't think the media is the problem here, although I'm not...
Oh, wow.
I know we don't like media.
That's a deflection if I haven't heard one.
Well, that's kill the messenger. But yeah. Listen, I am interested in the conversation. That's why we invited Attorney Rich Lenkoff to come into our studios. If you and I are having a private exchange, even if it's hateful stuff, even if it's wonderful stuff, who has the right to read that? You're stupid if you think it's going to be private, especially when it's to many people. I get it. But are we better off knowing this about him, and should we all have the right to read these things? He's not the president. He's not the owner of the team. 815, eventually we'll all be living back in caves out of fear for not being able to be perfect all of the time. 847, what's a public figure? A good question. I don't have a short answer to that. I know one when I see one. 630, John, I'm not saying what Ricketts said is okay. However, I don't see how knowing what he sent in the emails affects anyone else's day-to-day life. It just seems to be a huge invasion of privacy. Jim, you wanted to say what? You're on WGN. Hi.
Yes, when you share things on the internet, you should be just as culpable. It's very easy not to hit resend and not to share.
Yeah.
So he does have a measure of culpability.
Explain that to me. In other words, when he forwards an ignorant thing, then that's an expression of his own views, even if he didn't say it. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, because you don't have to share things you don't agree with. You don't have to share things you might think, oh, if I say this, you know, it might be taken the wrong way. You just don't send it if you have any sort of conscience of character.
Thanks for the phone call. I appreciate you joining us. There he goes. That's Jim. I'm going to call on you, Ms. DeSalvo, to repeat that. Was it T.S. Lewis? Yeah, T.S. Eliot?
C.S. Lewis.
C.S. Lewis.
Integrity is what you do when no one else is watching or doing the right thing. Ah, and I messed it up because I put it away. Integrity is doing the right thing even when no one else is watching.
I'll come back to you on that. We all need to learn that lesson today. Hey, John, you're on WGN. Go ahead. You're on the air, John.
Hi, guys. How are you? Real quick, you know, that whoever texted in or called in said, you know, the media's to blame for this. I kind of have to agree with them a little bit. Is it a slow media day today that we're giving so much attention to this today?
I don't think it's a slow media day. I think it's an interesting story, but you've heard me say I'm not sure that... We all benefit from knowing the ignorant things that some people feel.
I agree wholeheartedly. And on that note, I don't care who you are. Everyone at some point in their life has an ignorant thought, okay, whether they act on that thought
But you know, really? I mean, I can understand a 16-year-old or a 6-year-old, but he was 65. He was 70 years old when he was saying these things, or 72. You know, this is not the rantings of a...
Absolutely, yes. Agree with you wholeheartedly. What I have realized, coming from an all-Italian family, both sides, mother and father, my grandfathers would say it how it was. Yeah. Not to be ignorant about things. Maybe this was just a gentleman in his kind of older years in life saying how he felt.
Yeah. I appreciate your phone call, John. I know you don't agree with everything you heard, but I'm glad you shared your views with us. Thanks for calling in.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Bingo!
Here's John Williams.
I posted a bingo card on my Twitter page. I'm WGN King John on social media. That's Twitter and Insta. Facebook. I don't know if you've heard about Facebook. It's a going concern. I've posted my bingo card on my Twitter account, WGN King John, for tonight's State of the Union. It'll help you pass the time. Okay, real quick, which president had the longest State of the Union address in history? Which president had the longest State of the Union address in history? Anyone? Bueller?
No clue.
Oh, you got to have a clue. It happened in your lifetime. Happened
Lyndon
in your
Johnson.
Bill Clinton.
Really?
He went on and on and on.
Just, is that the one where it didn't load in the prompter?
I don't know.
That?
He did have to ad-lib it for a while, and he didn't miss a beat. I'll tell you, that man was bright. He just had a moral compass that sometimes went astray. So I just want to finish our conversation we had before the news. Thank you for all your texts and comments. And they continue to come in about this Joe Ricketts thing. And the last call was from a guy who said, you know, I've got some older family members, and sometimes these old people like Joe Ricketts, they just say some things that are colorful and off page and they should not be said. So Jen says to me off the air, old people sometimes say what they think, but they shouldn't say it. You probably have a senior citizen in your world that sometimes says things that make you roll your eyes. I don't know if those people get that way in their age or they always were that way and now they lose the filter. But I think we've all seen old people. But I don't think that's the Joe Ricketts isn't copying that. He's not saying, well, I'm getting up in years, and when you get to be about 75, you say cuckoo stuff. That's not it. That is not what this is. That's not what this is. Particularly since some of this stuff goes back 8-9 years. And he's how old again now, did I say? He's 74, 77? So he was saying this stuff in his 60s. I know people in their 60s, and they don't say stuff like this just because they're old and they're a loose cannon now.
Also, some of those people just don't think like that. Like, they don't think negative thoughts. There are people out there that have happy, kind thoughts about others.
Old people are also capable of equally wonderful thoughts, not ignorant and bigoted thoughts.
That's something that I've come to learn about people that I just didn't always get. You know, when you meet somebody, you give them the benefit of the doubt. You know, you let them, you think the best of them until they prove you wrong. Yeah. And just some people in my everyday life, it's just all of a sudden they meet me, they want to start talking about me. They want to start, you know, making up things or, you know, it's like we all just have that problem a little bit. You just need to think kind thoughts and try to be a good person. Try, just try.
What's that saying? I'm going to call on you every about 5-10 minutes to do the saying again.
Oh, to do this.
You tweeted it out, in fact. I can pull it up on my
Integrity
Twitter.
Is doing the right thing, even when no one is watching.
Integrity is doing the right thing, even when no one is watching. You want a feel-good story? So at the Super Bowl, one of the best commercials on the Super Bowl was the one for, was it Microsoft? They have the adaptive controller for gamers, and you met this little 9.5-year-old boy. Do you remember this voice?
My name is Owen, and I am 9.5 years old. I love video games, my friends, my family, and again, video games. It's difficult for me to use both joysticks and the D-pad at the exact same time. What I like about the adaptive controller is that now everyone can play.
One of the biggest fears early on is, how will Owen be viewed by the other kids? He's not different when he plays.
No matter how your body is or how fast you are, you can play. Fire! It's a really good thing to have in this world.
I went out and bought 22 of those things, and I don't even game. But whatever they're selling, I am now buying.
It's a great product.
It is a great commercial. He seems like a great kid, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
You know of this product, this thing?
I don't know of the product, but, you know, I get it with video games. People play them because they bring them into a different world. They're a different person. They're not who they are every day. And, you know, to prohibit a child from having that same experience as other children, you know, that's sad. So making this type of product really helps level the playing field and allow them to do what other kids are doing.
Owen Sermons, I'm 9.5 years old. His mother is Erica Sermons. And mm-hmm. She's on line 7. Erica, this is John Williams. You're on WGN Radio in Chicago. How are you?
Hello, I'm doing well. Thank you.
The Chicago chapter of the Owen Sermons fan club is here.
Yay!
And you're talking to the president and vice president of it right now, I'll tell you.
Yay. Thank you.
So what did you think when you saw the commercial the first time? What did you think when you saw it on the Super Bowl?
We were super excited the first time we saw it. A Microsoft exec came to our house and showed it to us just once. So we saw it, and then I was trying to remember, like, everything that we saw because it was overwhelming and crazy. So when we saw it live for the Super Bowl, we were surrounded by friends and family and neighbors and two of Owen's little friends who were in the commercial with him, and we're all, like, screaming so much I basically missed it again. So then we had to rewind it so we could actually watch it. It was so great. It was...
The second time you saw it was when it was on TV then?
Yes.
Oh, my. Mm-hmm. Wow. So take us back. Tell us your son's story. Who is he? What is that that causes him to need adaptive controllers?
Owen was born with Escobar syndrome, which is an extremely rare genetic disorder. So when he was born, he had very tight joints and tight muscles. So over 9 years, he's had 33 corrective surgeries to help lengthen and stretch his feet and his knees. And most of those surgeries were on his spine because he had scoliosis. Because he had tight joints in his hands, his fingers don't spread open as wide as, my hand might. So, like, specifically for this controller, it just allows him to play just as fast and press just as many buttons as any other little kiddo. So it helps him keep up.
Is he able to walk?
Yes. He uses a wheelchair for longer distances just because he tires easily. But, yep, he walks, jumps, dances. He does it all, yep.
What's the prognosis for somebody with this? Will they live a normal lifespan? Will he grow to a normal age, height? Let's talk a little bit about his future that way.
He will always be a little shorter. He is 9 years old, and he's 3 foot, 9.5 inches tall. We just measured him the other day because we were curious. 3 foot, 9 inches tall. So he'll always be on the shorter, growth chart spectrum. It's so rare. When he was diagnosed, we were told that only 1 of 75 worldwide confirmed cases, and now I think that number might be closer to 200. But through Facebook, we know other parents, adults, we know people living a great life well into their 50s and beyond.
Yeah.
So we think he's going to have, a full lifespan to just be a little bit shorter and use some of the wheelchair and other adaptive equipment that comes available, but he'll live a long, happy life.
1 of 75 in the world. We're visiting on the phone with Erica Sermons. Her son, Owen, is one of the kids, and he identifies himself, the 9.5-year-old kid who's using the adaptive controller. You may have seen the commercial in the Super Bowl. If you haven't, just Google Simmons or Microsoft Super Bowl ad, and you'll see a collection of kids who have some need for an adaptive controller. They're all darling. They're all wonderful. Your son really pops. And I'll just say this. I'm not talking about the other kids at all. They all seem terrific. But Owen seems to have such a he seems to be so proud of himself. He seems to have some confidence or self-assurance. And he seems to be just such a nice boy. Am I on
to
something?
Thank you.
Am I about right?
Yes, he's so intelligent. I don't know if it's because he spent time in the hospital and he has been brought up being surrounded by doctors, or if he was going to be this way anyway, but mm-hmm. we always say he's so, like, wise beyond his years.
Yeah, yeah.
He's so witty and smart and wonderful, and he just has the best personality. We feed off of him. I think he influences us. We're all, you know, focus on the positive. Don't worry about the negative.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
He embraces that. That is, you know, that commercial is Owen. That it wasn't scripted. That's what he thinks. That's how he feels. You know, we think he's the best.
What are you, his mother?
I know, right? I'm his number one fan.
but I'm not his mother, and I'm telling you, I got such a positive vibe from this kid. So how did Microsoft find you all, though? Was it from Facebook posting, or how did they know to tell his story or have him tell theirs?
Owen, the little boy in both commercials, he also was in Microsoft's Christmas commercial that premiered in the Macy's Parade. The little boy with him is his real-life best friend, Gunner, and Gunner and his family have done some commercial acting. So they just got a random email. They get them all the time just saying, like, we're looking for kids, you know, video gamers. So she submitted our boys together just to an email, and literally a week later, Owen and Gunner and the moms were flying to Vancouver to shoot the commercial for the Macy's Parade. It happened extremely fast.
And can I just give you one other observation about it?
Yes.
This is, I think, value to all of us who don't have mm-hmm. kids who have some sort of challenge like your son does. I don't recall seeing a kid who maybe is confined to a wheelchair or who needs an adaptive controller to sort of celebrate or compete the way other kids do, where he's cheering and he's like, yeah, I got it. And yeah, a lot of times we see videos of those kids. It's somebody helping them, or it's kind of a pitiable situation. But here he's on a level playing field. And lo and behold, mm-hmm. he has the same emotion and drive and energy and feel that the other kids do. And it was such a leveler. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. Yes, completely agree. For Owen, the truth behind all this is he doesn't perceive himself as any different. So when we were all, you know, asking the various questions, how does it feel? How does it feel to be a spokesperson for kids with different abilities? He does get it, but at the same time, he doesn't perceive himself as any different. So he's like, Mom, I am a gamer. I am this. I am that. Like he does get it, but he doesn't get it. So we think it's all like perfect and amazing.
Did he get like a lot of money for the commercial?
He got some money for the commercial. Yes,
yeah,
for a 9-year-old, he's doing very well. Yes.
here's a couple of texts from our listeners. John, that was not Owen's first commercial. We met him before in another commercial for that product. He's been a star. Is that true? Have they reached out to him for previous commercials?
Yes, he was in the Microsoft Xbox Christmas, like holiday commercial. Yes.
This one says, John, that Xbox commercial made me cry when I saw it during the Super Bowl. It was the greatest commercial. In fact, I just cried again when you played it on the radio. This one says, John, my son is 17 and has a limb difference. He was born without a left hand. This is amazing. My son does not have this because he's a PlayStation player, but I cried, and I might buy one anyway. So,
yay, buy it.
Yeah, you guys have done good. Well, listen, my best to your husband. That was him that was in the commercial speaking about your son as well.
Yeah.
And so props to your family and certainly to young Owen. Tell him that we were all impressed with his attitude, and he's pretty good on TV, too.
Yeah, I will let him know. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Is there anything we can do for you guys? Is there an organization or a fund or a charity that you all are working with, Erica?
We don't work with anyone quite like that, but I will say in 2016, Owen received a Make-A-Wish, and we love that organization. We're just thankful for all the help and support we get all, you know, throughout all of our process.
Erica Sermons, the mother of Owen Sermons in Texas. Okay, Erica, we'll let you go. Our best to your family. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Have a good day. So maybe make a wish if you want to. About our past guest, Poe, one of our video whiz bangs over here, came into the studio during the commercial break, and he said, you know, and I don't know if he's a gamer or not, but he said, gamers have a bad image in the public eye. You know, waste of time and violent and they're misanthropes. They don't get along in society well, yada, yada, yada. So they're downstairs gaming. This is not true. It was nice to see a commercial that portrayed gamers in a positive light and that it has value and da-da-da-da-da.
It's a varsity sport.
Hi, my name is Jen DeSalvo, and I've been a PC gamer since 1993.
Mm.
Yeah.
You just went down.
A lot of universities.
It's right over here. Is it Roosevelt? What's the school? One of the universities here in Chicago offers scholarships like a sport to gamers.
It's a varsity sport. You get a letter.
You know, I used to sit in front of the computer for hours playing The Sims.
Oh, ditto.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do. I do.
Yeah, well, Rosebud was the password, so you had unlimited cash.
Or Motherlode.
Fortnite, do you guys do that?
I don't do the Fortnite.
No.
That's like a thing. My son turned to me the other day and said, I don't do it, and you don't do it, but you need to know that's a thing.
Wasn't the video game industry considered the most...
More money than motion pictures.
It's considered an entertainment industry, right? So it's bigger than everything else
and
combined,
voiceovers.
Basically.
If you can snag voiceover gigs in the gaming industry...
Really?
Oh, there's so much money there.
God, I remember used to get yelled at for playing video games all day. Now you get a scholarship for it.
I'm still not... Listen, this is a great commercial. Those are great kids. And I'm all for adaptive controllers for them. But I'm still not sure. Think of... We could have cured cancer by now. People like you two would get off the damn consoles and go cure cancer or... You know, figure out a way to make energy out of biscuits or I don't know what we need to do. I'm working on that in the Sims right now.
I've grown out of the video game stuff, but I used to be like Madden was me all day long.
Do you really think that we were going to be the ones curing cancer?
Yeah, what have you been doing?
My husband actually leads the club at his high school for video gaming and pop culture. And he's just started it this year. And like
he's a teacher?
Yeah, the first week there were over 30 kids that showed up. They were just really excited. He just has a couple of rules. And I know one of the rules is no first-person shooter games. They don't talk about that.
Amen to that.
Yeah, they don't. Yeah. But any other type of video games or comic books and pop culture, you know. So trying to make sure that those kids understand that it is cool to be a comic.
This is what poisoned the well for me, despite whatever else I brought into it. The last movie I watched, or a movie I recently watched, was Tully. Have you guys seen the movie Tully?
No.
It's about a woman who's having kids. One of them has got some issues, and her life's just very complicated, and she has a tenuous grasp of sanity. And her husband, her mate in life, the person that she's trying to get through all of this with, at night, every night, he comes home from work, kisses her, has dinner, goes out, lies in the bed and games, puts on the headsets, and he's sitting there, click, 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 while she's got this terrible life. And it's just, you're like, what kind of parent, what kind of adult is doing that? Again, my son goes, Dad, there's a lot of people out there of all ages. You think that's out there. That's a thing. That's a thing. And you need to be aware of that.
Well, you asked about how my husband, you know, is with my long distance running. On a Saturday, if I go out and run for 8 hours, he's like, yeah, I can play video games for a few. And then I don't like want the TV or anything.
God bless that little boy in that commercial.
Yeah.
What a fantastic young man in that Microsoft ad for adaptive controllers. We just visited with Erica Sermons, the mother of 9.5-year-old Owen Sermons. By the way, that Green Bay Packers fan.
Yeah.
Who is suing to wear the Green Bay Packers gear on the sideline of Soldier Field is on the line.
He ruined it for everybody.
Well, now let's be nice.
Like a Packer fan would.
Hey. It says here the Chicago Bears have axed the perk for season ticket holders that prompted one longtime participant, a Green Bay Packers fan, to sue the football team. The pregame on-field warm-up experience. That's what the Bears would offer you. If you have a season ticket to the Bears game, you get to participate in the pre-game on-field warm-up experience. It allowed season ticket holders who had enough points to stand on the sidelines and watch the team get ready for a home game at Soldier Field. But as you may know, one of those season ticket holders, a guy who's bought season tickets to the Bears games here at Soldier Field, is a Packers fan. And he comes to the games, and when he engages in that experience, he'll wear his Packer jersey, which I don't know how bad that looks, but it's agitating to either the organization or other fans or both. And so they told him he can't wear that, and then he sued them. And while that's still up in the air, the Bears have said, fine, now nobody gets to play in the sandbox. They have axed the pregame on-field warm-up experience. At least that's how I understand where it is now. That man, Russell Beckman, joins us on WGN. Russell, welcome back to the John Williams Show on WGN. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing fine, and I'm happy to be back on your show. I enjoyed it last time. I'm sure I'm going to enjoy it this time.
Well, we'll see.
Well, I'm ready. Let's talk, John.
So where are we on your lawsuit? Because, right, you were suing. First of all, answer this question first. So what was it that the Bears then said, that you can't wear that jersey on the sideline, right?
Yeah, and for the pregame experience that for season ticket holders, and you should know, and your listeners should know, that I only wear the Packer jersey when I go to the Bears-Packer game in Chicago. I go to other Bear events and other even season ticket holder events, and I don't wear that when I'm at one of those more intimate things, but I will wear it for the Bears-Packer game. After all, this is a rivalry, and this is why people go to the games, to watch these two teams play. Yeah. So I will take no blame nor credit if, in fact, the Bears are actually going to do this. And in my mind, it's not clear that they're actually going to do it. We can talk about that if you'd like also.
Last season, what happened at the Bears game?
Well, last season, I wasn't allowed to go on the field because the judge didn't accept the motion that we filed to allow me to wear my Packers stuff on the field before that game. However, the Bears strictly enforced their rule, and my son, who used my experience points to get onto the field, was wearing a Wisconsin football jersey with Mark Tauscher's name on the back, and he wore a hand-knit green hat with a yellow and white accent stripe that had no Packer emblems at all. He was ordered to remove that hat before he would be let onto the field.
That's weird. So while you had that opportunity, you gave it to your son. How old's your son?
Well, he's a young adult. He's 25 years old.
Okay, I just don't want to put a 9-year-old in harm's way. So here's a 25-year-old. He's wearing a red and white University of Wisconsin sweater, you say?
A jersey.
And
a green.
Packer-colored hat.
Knit hat.
Okay.
Knit hat. And he said, you can't wear that on the field. He had to give it up. And I held it while he went on the field to enjoy the experience. How petty is that?
I don't know who's being pettier here, Russell. So then your son, then, just to push it, wears Green Bay colors on a hat onto the field just to test the Bears' limits. And they said hat has to come off, huh?
Exactly.
Okay.
What happens when the Denver Broncos come to town? They'll have very similar colors to the Bears. Does that mean that you can't wear those colors onto the field for this pregame warm-up? This whole thing makes the Bears look petty, weak, and trivial. They should be more like their fans, who are strong, and their fans really don't care what opposing teams' fans wear. The Bears should need to spend some time with their hardworking, gritty, resilient fans and maybe take a clue from them and not be so sensitive.
Don't patronize us, Russell. So it says here,
I'm not patronizing.
As a result, it says here that people are not going to be allowed to have the experience any longer. And that's because it must be quite a coincidence if, coming on the heels of your suit, this is what's happening.
Well, if the Bears are actually going to do that, and I don't know for sure if they're going to do it, I would be disappointed, along with thousands of other Bears season ticket holders. This is an experience that I was really looking forward to taking my grandchildren to.
Sure.
And my kids, who are young adults, went to it, and guess what? No one can do it anymore. I mean, that's if the Bears are actually doing it, that is an immature thing. You know, a little bit ago, I got a text from one of my dear friends who's a Bear fan, who has a young boy who went to his first game, Bears game, this past season, who wrote, "Screw the fans to save face." I mean, that's exactly what I think the Bears are doing. I think that's exactly how their season ticket holders are going to perceive this.
John,
can I ask
a question, John?
Yeah, go ahead. This is Kevin. He's in our sports department.
Mr. Beckman, you're a Packers fan. Why do you have Bears season tickets?
Well, why not? I'm a fan of the NFL.
Well, I would never get Packers season tickets.
How do you feel about the Chicago Bears?
You know, I want the Chicago Bears to be successful. I want the Bears-Packer game to mean something every year.
Yeah, but I'll tell you, when the Bears are playing the Lions, who do you root for?
Yeah. Well, whatever's in the best interest of the Packers.
So you're not a Bears fan. You're a football fan and you're a Packer fan, but you're not a Bears fan. Okay, so why would you, as a Green Bay Packers fan, buy season tickets to the Bears?
Well, I grew up just across the border to Kenosha. I'm surrounded by Bear fans who switch rivalries, just like the Packer fans switch rivalries depending on what team is winning. And why not? I put myself on the list for Packer season tickets and Bear season tickets when I was a teenager. I have both. I enjoy going to both, you know, both stadiums. In fact, I was in Chicago last night. I spent the night in a hotel in the Loop. I love Chicago. I spend a lot of time there. And it's not, maybe it's unusual for me to have season tickets to two NFL teams, but I do. I mean, I'm allowed to. There's nothing wrong with that.
You sell your tickets to some of the Bears games, right?
Well, some of them, but a lot of them. In fact, the last couple of years, you couldn't sell them. You couldn't hardly even give them away, which is pretty sad, which is why it's nice that the Bears maybe are going to start a winning trend.
Were you rooting for the Bears? Were you hoping that Cody Parkey's field goal went in? Were you hoping they'd get into the playoffs and advance?
Of course. I certainly was, because the Packers were out of it. And I'll be honest with you, I wanted to see the Bears go all the way to the Super Bowl, because even though it seems odd, they're pretty much my second favorite team. The Packers are definitely my first.
Well, if that's
the Packers
the truth,
are out of it.
Listen, Russell, if that's the truth, then you've been misrepresented here, because I think everybody looks at this story and they go, you're just one of those cheeseheads that hates the Bears, and that's all it is. And you're happy to thumb your nose, and you're happy to take that nice perk away from all of the Bears fans.
Oh, hold on. Let me, John, Mr. Williams, I did not take it away. If it's being taken away, it's being taken away by the Bears ownership. Maybe you should get a hold of George McCaskey, get him on your show, and ask these questions to him, because it is not my responsibility. And I don't think the Bears are going to actually do it.
Why do you say that?
Well, you know something? They brought it up in court. They wanted to test the waters to see if they could get the case dismissed based on the concept of mootness. The research was done. It wouldn't apply, and maybe they changed their mind. You know, the Bears just last week emailed a letter from Ted Phillips to all their season ticket holders, and in that letter it basically said three things. We're going to have a price increase for tickets next year. We're going to paperless ticket system, and you got to pay for your tickets in March. Now, if the Bears were going to basically cut back perks for season ticket holders, they should have probably put it in that letter. Because if they didn't, that would really be kind of shady. And I would be very disappointed if they didn't. Now, it wasn't in that letter, so maybe the decision still hasn't been made. And maybe Bears season ticket holders should get a hold of the Bears and find out and maybe put some pressure on them.
Our texts include these. Doesn't this man have nothing better to do? 630 says he's profiting off the Bears. I'm exactly sure what they mean by that. John, stop picking on this guy. Sports are both supposed to be fun, and so are rivalries. And anybody who can afford it can buy tickets and attend the games. 630 says to you, though, thanks for ruining it for everybody. 224, why does a Packers fan have season tickets? You just answered that. And 708, why are you giving this fool airtime? Get him off. You are disrespecting Chicago. I don't think you're doing all of that, but I understand people's angst about you and your role in this. Uh-huh. I'm going to take a call from Jeff. You're on WGN. What did you want to say, Jeff? You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. On the food service side, we can't keep the mustard and relish together on the condiment cart, because it represents Packer colors throughout the entire year.
This is an outrage. I was unaware of that, and that's got to stop. All right, thanks for the call. I didn't know that. See what you've done? Russell, we can't even have...
You know, my influence is not that pervasive. But you're giving me way too much credit, Mr. Williams.
And we can't even have our Chicago dogs the way we like because of you.
Oh, well, I don't know what to say, except you're being misguided. I think that if there is any blame or credit to go, it's got to be put on the Bears ownership. Right, I'm just a regular guy.
All right, last thing.
Remember
for
that.
All right, good. You know you're not a regular guy, but you're not a bad guy. We're trying to figure it out. Russell, here's my next question for you. Ready?
Okay, good. I'm ready.
Let me just read a couple more of these texts, see if I can read them on the radio. John, I feel the same way as this guy does. I feel the same way as he does. I'm a fan of both. I live near the border. John, don't question his fandom. This is purely bad on the Bears, says another texter. And now who's being petty, says 847. This guy that John is talking to right now needs to listen to himself. 708 says, you got to be a moron wearing Green Bay garb on the sidelines. That's the, you know, that's one takeaway from this, is that I appreciate your attitude, right? But you have to know that the rivalry is so heated that some people won't share your happy, good sport attitude about it. That them's fighting words when you wear Packer gear on the sidelines for a Bears game during warm-up. I mean, that's antagonistic, right, Russell?
I disagree, because anyone can go onto the field wearing whatever jersey they want as long as they pay one of the Bears' ticket partners, Vivid Seats, $500.
I'm not saying
After I filed my action in federal court, I was on the sidelines for the Bears-Atlanta game in September of 2017. No one said boo to me, because I paid $500 for that privilege. The Bears will take money if you want to pay to do it, but for their season ticket holders, they dictate what you can wear.
You stay safe. So you stay well. I'm hanging up on you now, Russell, but I'll probably call you again someday. But good luck to you and your family. Thanks for coming on the show again, and I appreciate you giving us some of your time.
And I'll be happy to be back, John, whenever you ask me.
Okay, Russell Beckman, you be well now.
All right, you too. Thank you. Goodbye.
I'm sorry if that was upsetting to you. I'm just trying to do a radio show here. Rokon, Anna DeVlantis, and their team are ready to entertain and inform you.
We are.
The bar's pretty high there, Ro.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think the bar, we like to lower the bar every day for ourselves, is how we do it. You leave a very high bar, and then we just immediately, it's like what I used to do in gym class. I move the bar very much to the bottom, and I'm like, I'm not going to do the Fosbury flop. I'm just going to jump onto the mat. Is that good enough? Because that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
So that's what we do. But I want to say, though, I'm not exactly sure where all of this is going to go, but there are so many stories of people doing dumb things.
So many apologies, really.
Yes.
Yeah.
The apology tour.
Things that should never have happened, ever.
So you got the governor of Virginia.
Yeah, he's yesterday's news.
The patriarch of the Cubs.
Yeah, you got the
patriarch. Amara Anya's finances.
She's also yesterday's news. We got
Liam. You forgot Liam.
We got
Liam
Neeson.
Yeah.
That's right. I didn't really mean to say it. Yes, I did.
This is the worst. It was the worst apology, too. Because the apology wasn't even like, I don't really feel that. At least Joe Ricketts was denying that he ever felt like that, which is obviously not true either. But with Liam Neeson, it's sort of like, okay.
He said he felt that way, and it was just sort of this primal way he felt at that moment.
Oh, God. At least this Packer fan didn't apologize for wrecking it for everybody.
And his proco Joe Moreno having to explain himself today. The alderman, there's just another one. He's the Chicagoan having the worst day today, I would say.
Why would it? He is the alderman
of the first ward. Who two stories have come out. Channel 9 did a story last night. Ben Bradley
Reyes
tried to talk about it.
Yeah.
No. He lent his car to a girl he says was his ex girlfriend, and then he calls the police to report it stolen, and they arrest her, and he has to explain the whole thing, and there's that, and then on the exact same day he's trying to explain his way out of that. Yeah. He has the news breaks that he may have also been on the wire.
Oh, really? Yeah. On the Danny Solis wire?
Yes. So,
I wonder if you are on there, Ro. You get around.
That
would be rich. I'm not wishing this on you. Shut my mouth. But wouldn't it be cool if there was some Rokon conversation?
I wouldn't be surprised if there were. I don't know.
Just go back and think through what you might have said back then.
Yeah,
okay?
It's over
just,
5 years.
Refresh your memory.
5, 10 years.
When I'm around politicians, I try not to commit a crime. That is my rule.
Great move.
Because I do know that, I assume that they're all wired. I've got friends who are, former aldermen and former city officials and stuff like that.
Yeah, muckety mucks.
And when we have lunch together, sometimes we have to go and get naked in a Turkish bath to prove that we're not wearing a wire. But other times, there's the hug takes about 45 seconds. It's like you're going through TSA, you know, where they pat you down. Everybody puts on rubber gloves and they pat everybody down.
I just got a text from my attorney. He said I'd be in my best interest to stop talking to you, so I'm going to go away now.
All right. Thank you very much. Bye.